Welcome back to the Shepherd's Pie, a slice of faith for our messy lives. I'm Tony Kolenk, the author of inspirational fiction for teens and adults, as well as a legal columnist for Practical Homeschooling Magazine and a professor at Ave Maria School of Law. In 2026, I'm looking forward to the release of book two in my Incarnate series from Chrism Press. So I'm looking forward to that coming out in the trilogy. But today I'll be speaking with Frank Ravanelli about returning to the faith when life has taken us off the path. My guest today is Frank Ravanelli, the author of Pages of the Adur, a fantasy novel. Frank is a pricing analyst by profession, but a fantasy author at heart. He graduated with a degree in marketing from the University of Akron. He was raised in a large Catholic family with five brothers, and he currently resides in Northeast Ohio with his two golden retrievers. Frank, it is great to have you on the Shepherd's Pie.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the episode. I really appreciate it, Tony.
So, all right. So you grew up in Ohio, obviously went to school in Ohio, and somehow have decided as a pricing analyst to start writing fantasy. That sounds like you probably had some sort of a journey there. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, of course. So I grew up in Northeast Ohio, pretty large family, five brothers, and I grew up homeschooled too. I was homeschooled from elementary school to sixth grade. When I was homeschooled, my mom, I had the best mom ever, she would fortunately give us long recesses. And when I went outside with my brothers, we would always create all kinds of stories. We'd imagine different stories. And we always loved Lord of the Rings growing up. And that kind of fueled my creativity. So when I was homeschooled, I ended up going to public school in Highland when I was in sixth grade. And then after graduation of Highland, I went to the University of Akron. And at first, I was an English major, but found that maybe English wasn't my best subject. So then I went into marketing. And I always still had that passion to write and create a story. I just didn't start. And I wrote like a couple pages like once. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll do this one day. And then I never got back to it. And eventually, when I eventually moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, I had some alone time. I said, okay, now's the time. I want to start writing a fantasy novel and create something. So it was kind of a long journey to find out that I wanted to be a fantasy author.
You know, it's amazing how The Lord of the Rings has had such an impact on so many people's lives over several generations. I believe I'm significantly older than you. And when I was in high school, that series also was important in shaping not only how I kind of just enjoyed my imagination in the world, like you were describing, but even just as a writer. And even now as a writer, I will read that series from time to time to kind of enjoy it again. You know, when I'm writing, a lot of what I try to write almost to evoke some of the same kinds of feelings I felt reading that series. So it's kind of interesting how Tolkien has made such an impact on so many people. All right, so you have written this fantasy. Now you've got the first book done. Give us a little bit of the premise of this first book and the series itself.
Yeah, so it takes place on this planet called Erdina. So Erdina is a fallen world. It's ruled by a dark lord. All the continents, there's two continents, Jagoria and Inrealm. And the Dark Lord lives in Inrealm. In the beginning of the universe, the three gods and the main god created Erdina. And there was a clash between God and his most loyal servant, Sinfer. And when that clash happened, it kind of created the sin of the world. And the sin of the world was explained in the constellations. So when this war of the gods happened, main god, Aminya, wrote in the stars of a prophesied being that would be born of an unnatural race in Jagoria and kind of realign the constellations, kind of take or eradicate the sin that is going on. So it's all about the prophesied being Uriel and his journey to kind of eradicate this evil. And when in this journey, he meets friends and he makes a lot of connections with other people, and they all go on the journey with him. It's a story about good versus evil, but in this story, the evil is not just evil that's going to try to take over the entire world. This evil is going to try to make you doubt who you are, doubt your abilities. And that's what I kind of made. I really wanted to touch upon what true evil is today. Yeah, that's kind of the premise of the story.
Wow, we will have to unpack some of that because I can definitely, although you've written it in a fantasy world with a fantasy universe and gods and a history, there are definitely echoes of, the Old Testament that I'm hearing and the New Testament in what you wrote. So you've got the first book done, and how many books are you envisioning, and when do you think people might see a second book?
I'm envisioning three books total, but I could foresee up to six.
Yeah, I remind when I was writing the Harwood Mysteries with Loyola Press, I had a similar thing going on. I was like, well, I've got like nine books in my head. In the end, we decided to end it after the sixth book, but I still have those other three books sitting in my brain somewhere. One day they'll probably come out. So I feel your pain as an author, just not quite sure when to stop. But all right, so let's then unpack some of what you were describing, because what I heard in your description was something to me that parallels my understanding of the spiritual history of our own universe. So, why did you pick that to unpack them, and what are you hoping the reader is going to be able to do with those parallels?
Yeah, so when I first started this book, before I started this book, like I had the idea when I was in college. I think I was like 18 or 19 years old. And I couldn't write it because I felt like I wasn't connected to my faith. And then years later, when I had more life experiences, and with these life experiences brought a lot of suffering in my life. And that's when I'm like, okay, I have a lot of good content, a lot of stuff I want to talk about, but I didn't really want to make a biography about myself. I wanted to create a whole new universe and go through biblical themes that relate to us today. So, after experiences that were hard for me, I wanted to actually display it in a book because I notice a lot of the themes in this book, people are being affected by it today. So, like I said, these characters, they go through a lot of suffering, and that's why I wanted to write about it. I wanted to really explain that aspect of my book.
All right, and you've now mentioned suffering a few times. I know you've got a story to tell us from your own life, but maybe give us first a little bit of an example of in the book, how does that theme come out in the lives of your character?
So when my characters, before they embark on the great journey to Panacea Throne, they all had like goals in life or where they wanted to be. Oh, like some of the characters wanted to grow up and be great knights. Some characters wanted to travel all across the lands. And none of that really occurs in their journey. They go through a lot of challenges and a lot of suffering. And at first, they're just like, why is this happening? They talk to each other. This journey didn't turn out like it was supposed to. And they don't understand it at the time. But there is a character in my book is the only one that really embraces the suffering. He understands this is for the greater purpose. If we trust in, her name is Queen Eliza, which is actually imagery for the Blessed Virgin Mary. If we trust in her, this will all unfold how it's supposed to. So at first they're all just confused, like this life is not turning out like it's supposed to. Why are we coming across these conflicts? But then, as they move on in their journey, they start understanding the grand plan. So it's more so like keeping your faith when challenges arise. And that's what my characters do. They really keep their faith in Eliza and God when all these challenges arise.
Authors write what they know, and you've kind of referenced a few times now the possibility of in your own life, even how some of your own suffering or plans going awry. Maybe if you could share a little bit sort of that journey and how that maybe has inspired you to put similar themes into the story here.
So I think suffering, like I said, is one of the main themes in this book because in my own life, there was times that I didn't understand fully why this is happening to me. I wanted to almost forsake my suffering. I didn't offer it up. I didn't understand it. And I was honestly, like my characters, I would get mad at God and say, why? Why am I suffering at the moment? And I always say this is very interesting. If the angels could be jealous of us for anything, it would be for our ability as humans to receive the Eucharist and to suffer. And after I wrote this book, I truly understand the meaning of that now. Because there were times in my life that I was just down. I was kind of more depressed at the moments. And I didn't know what the main purpose of my life was, where my journey would go. And that's when I'm like, okay, And I really was like, I wanted to almost abandon my suffering. But then moving forward in my life, I understood it was all for the greater purpose that God has for us.
Now, there's a lot of different ways that we suffer in our lives, and you still seem like a fairly young individual. Have there been times where your plans didn't kind of work out the way you wanted them to? And how did you kind of handle that with your own faith situation?
There are many times, and even every single day, I think about it. I'm like, I wish my life would have turned out like this. I wish that I would have had a family by now with 10 plus kids. Maybe not 10 plus kids, but I wish I would have had a big family by now. And I always think that through. I'm like, okay, that's my suffering. That's my piece of the cross that I have to carry. And every single day, yeah, I really do think through that. I envisioned my life so much different at the time, but I understand that if you really embrace your piece of the cross and understand that God has a greater plan for you, you really start appreciating the suffering. Every single day, yeah, I would say that I kind of envision my life differently.
And in your story, you've got this Queen Eliza character, which you said is sort of a parallel to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Why did you bring this Queen Eliza in, and how is that a reflection of kind of in your own life where you've, found peace and inspiration?
Yeah, so that's a great question too, because this is a very extraordinary story. When I was writing this book, I had no plan of writing about the Virgin Mary. I didn't think about it. It was just not one of my plans. I didn't have a plan to have a queen in it. I had princesses, I had heroic women, but I never had a plan to write about the Virgin Mary. And then one day, I'm writing on my couch, and I'm not even kidding. I wrote a paragraph and I started writing about a perfect imagery of the Virgin Mary, and I actually reread it, and I'm like, I didn't even remember reading that. So I felt like it was almost a divine intervention when I started writing about her. And I have such a devotion to the Virgin Mary. I was in Lourdes, France last year. After having this devotion to her, I really wanted to make this book really kind of devoted to her. There's a lot of bad in this book. There's a lot of creatures that are resemble demons. And I wanted to write about how the good is so much stronger than the evil. The bad side, the demonic side, is so scared of our Blessed Mother, which is Queen Eliza. So yeah, it kind of just came to be. It was a very extraordinary experience.
Now, Queen Eliza is actually like a living person, I'm assuming. So what kind of influence is she able to extend to your characters? Is she on the journey with them, or how is she bringing her under her protection?
She doesn't actually journey with them. They eventually meet her in the book. The characters always have a feeling that she's with them at all times. She's a living person, but she doesn't actually go to Penitencia Throne with them. But through her wisdom and the connection they have with her, they always feel protected. Because on Erdina, the mother of all of them is Queen Eliza, and they understand that. So when challenges arise, they understand, okay, we still have the guidance, the protection of Queen Eliza.
All right, so people often have plans for their lives. You've indicated even now that you sometimes look back and think about different paths that I guess you would have liked to have seen come to fruition that haven't. And that's definitely a tough thing in all of our lives. I can look back on my own life and see, different paths. And yet somehow when I look back now, I also kind of see it as, this was the path that I needed to take, and this was the path that God has blessed and has brought me to where I'm supposed to be. How did that play out in your own life? Where do you see kind of faith interacting with those kinds of disappointments when they come?
Yeah, I wouldn't more so say regrets. There have been times when I was kind of disappointed in myself where I should have done something or I should have been more connected to my faith. Times when I was down and I just didn't know where to go. And now that I know I'm more connected to my faith, that I know that, okay, if something didn't go as planned, I understand it now. I pray about it now. And that was the thing. The only thing I would regret in my life ever is I didn't have this devotion to my faith until after college, and I'm not sure why. I was kind of on my own in college. I felt like, okay, I'm gonna do this myself. I don't need God's help. And I wasn't an atheist at the time, but I was more agnostic. I didn't practice my faith, and that's such a lonely life. And then that's the only thing I would regret. I wish I was more connected at the time. But now, moving forward, being so connected to my faith has really helped me grow because now I truly understand that God's plan is so great and it's great for all of us.
And I think what you just said really struck a chord with me. Many of us have, people in our lives, whether they're kids or grandkids or siblings, that for whatever reason were maybe raised in the faith, and then they go off to college, and the world suffocates their faith, it seems. And so many of them, it seems, don't come back. So I guess what I'm wondering is maybe. When you showed up at college, here you were a homeschooled young man. Already we're thinking of writing fantasy that actually echoed your faith. And yet, how is it you wound up to the point of almost being an agnostic in that situation?
I would say that I was kind of obsessed with what the world offered. I was doing well with my academics and I had no connection with God. And I felt like, well, I'm doing good. I'm doing, my grades are great. I landed an internship that was very competitive. I don't know how I landed it. And I felt like, okay, I don't need God. I don't need to go to church on Sunday, which was so false because God could take everything away from me at that moment. And I felt like being away, I was with so many people that aren't Catholic, that aren't Christian. And I just kind of just, and there was so much bad influence in, there is so much bad influence in college that I felt like, okay, I became more so obsessed with the world than my faith. It was a bad impact on my life.
So this might be an opportunity to even speak some hope, because I know there's a lot of families that, their kids have strayed, and it's usually associated with college, and they don't know how it's possible for what you just described to happen, especially if they raised the kid in the faith. What was it, and when was it that you suddenly realized that actually you did need God in your life, and you were able to turn back to your faith?
The moment that I realized, okay, I need to go back to the faith, I need to start going to church and receiving the Eucharist, was I was traveling. I was basically obsessed with, like I said, everything the world offered. And I felt like I was the most lonely at the time. And nothing was providing me happiness. Going out with my friends, traveling, none of this was providing true happiness. And my mom is, like I said, a very devout Catholic. She's amazing. She brought me back to my faith. And suddenly she just started asking me, do you want to start going to church with me on Sundays? And I started going. I started going back to confession. And every time I went back to confession, I'm like, wow, our Catholic faith is so beautiful. And when I got more connected to my faith after college, I felt like this is true freedom. This is what love feels like. And then that was the happiest I've ever been. When I was in Lourdes, surrounded by all Catholics, that was the happiness that the happiest I've ever been. And I was without everything that I thought brought me value in my life. I was without going out, stuff that was materialistic. I was just surrounded by Catholics, and that was indeed the happiest I ever was in my entire life.
That definitely is an encouraging story. I know to even hear that a parent can be instrumental, because so often I know we, as parents, we think, our kid has gone off a certain path. The plans that we had for them, have all fallen apart because they lost their faith or whatever. And we just pray that God will put somebody in their life to lead them back to the faith. And sometimes we don't think that person's going to be us. How was your mom able to do that in a way that didn't somehow push you further away if you were already kind of separated?
So I think she did that in a great way. She never really yelled at us about, you have to come to church, you have to come to church. She would just, everything, like she would play Gregorian chants throughout our house. She would go to church with my grandma, my grandparents. And there was always a part of me that was sad that it was seeing my grandparents that are older go to church with her, my dad, my little brothers. And I was like, well, maybe I'll start going. And she invited me every single time. And most of the times I said, no, I don't want to go. And she never pushed it, like I said, but that invitation every single time kind of steered me more towards the church. And then, of course, my grandma too is yet saying, yeah, you got to come to church with us. So all that just kind of helped me connect back and wanting me to go back to church. And she explained all the graces that she re received from going to church. And I was like, well, if I'm Catholic, I want to start embracing in Catholicism, learning more about it.
That is really neat. I'm so glad to hear that she was able to have that kind of an impact. And like I said, that is something that I think is near and dear to many parents' hearts of young people. And the other thing though that you said earlier, which was interesting, was that being homeschooled, it sounded like your family had a fairly robust devotion to the faith as you were growing up. I don't know, maybe talk a little bit about, is that kind of what the draw was that brought you back? Do you think you would have had the same ability to return if you hadn't had the initial foundation in the faith?
I think the upbringing of being Catholic and going to daily mass was so beneficial. And if I didn't have that, if I wasn't raised Catholic, I think I could return to Catholicism and return to the faith, but it would have been definitely more difficult. I mean, we were going to daily mass. Most of our assignments during homeschooling was kind of faith-centered assignments. We would go on retreats, we'd meet other homeschooled people. And that really, I valued that so much because my mom was so centered on teaching us about the faiths, teaching us about the values we should have. And without that, I think I would struggle, to be honest. So I was so appreciative of how she really kind of laid the foundation of our faith.
Wonderful. So if somebody's listening today and they're somebody who either has gone off, life's plans have not worked out for them, or maybe for somebody that they love, whether it's a child or somebody else that they had plans for, and now life is sort of throwing all these curveballs at them. What kind of advice might you have for those people when they're in the midst of the suffering?
Like I said, suffering is very difficult. And without God, it's even worse. And you have to embrace the suffering. And think how cool it is that we, like I said earlier, we can take a piece of Jesus' cross. We can experience the suffering that he went through, a piece of it, a tiny portion of it. And you have to understand that you're going through it for some reason. I had a great conversation with someone earlier this week, and this person was suffering. They said, "Why? I nothing's working out as planned." And I said, eventually something's good's going to happen because God is forging you into the person you need to be. And if you're going through suffering right now, you are being forged. You are going through this difficult time because there is a greater purpose. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, this is some beautiful reflections. I appreciate you sharing all this with us. And I'm assuming that the themes that you kind of have been riffing on here in the last little bit are some of the same kinds of experiences that your characters are having in your series.
Exactly. All of my characters and their suffering is all different. And it's very interesting because some of them maybe have lost a loved one. Some of them, their plan didn't work out. They didn't become that great knight. And they're wondering why. And some of them, without the faith, they're just so lonely. They don't understand. They're just mad. They're angry about it. But the person that's going through suffering that has the faith is happy. They understand, okay, I'm suffering. But I have Queen Eliza behind me. I have God behind me. And it's just a totally different kind of suffering for each individual. But some of them offer it up where the others don't know how to handle it.
Well, it sounds like readers can definitely get a lot of insight about our own lives, even though that's what I love about fantasy is, you have all these kind of different worlds and crazy names and whatever, but at the core of it, you're really writing about humanity and the things that really matter in our lives in this world. And so that's a beautiful thing. Thank you for sharing about your series and about your own life journey and returning to the faith. If folks are interested in getting a hold of this first book, which is already out in the series, tell us where you think they should go and where they should go to learn more about you.
Yeah, so the best place to go would be my website, frankravenelli.com. Of course, Amazon. It's on Amazon. I do post very often, about 3 times a day on TikTok. So it's just called Fantasy Frankie. You can find me in Fantasy Frankie. So I post every single day there. So I'd say those three spots. You can learn a lot about me on TikTok. I post every single day about faith-centered themes. And I would say there, and of course, my website or Amazon.
That's pretty cool. On TikTok, you can really reach, I'm assuming, a pretty good young audience too. Do you actually talk about some of the things we've been talking about on TikTok, about, your own return to the faith and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very broad. I talk about a lot of it is through scripture. I talk about a Bible verse and how it relates to our life today. I talk about a lot of people on TikTok, I notice, and on social media, they do go through suffering because they see people with lives that might be more extravagant than their own. And they're wondering, oh, I want to be like that. So I talk a lot about that you can't let that affect you. So yeah, I do talk about a lot about suffering, a lot about motivation too. So it's kind of all over the place, but it's a great place to learn a lot about me.
Well, Frank, it has been wonderful having you on the Shepherd's Pie. Thank you for sharing about your book and about your faith journey, and Godspeed to you and all your future writing.
Thank you so much, Tony. I really appreciate it. It was nice meeting you.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the show today. Again, this is Anthony Barone Kolenc. If you want to find out more about my book from Chrism Press or any of my teen fiction, you can go to my website, anthonykolenc.com, and learn everything you need to know there. But until next time, may God bless us as we rely on our faith to work through the messy challenges of our lives.